I was looking at specs for a new high-performance laptop the other day, and the biggest selling point wasn't the processor speed or the RAM.
Let me guess, it was the cooling.
It was the cooling system.
Mm-hmm.
Vapor chambers, liquid metal, these massive fans. It felt like I was buying, I don't know, an HVAC system, not a computer.
It's the defining bottleneck of modern engineering, really. We've hit a point where we can generate power and process data way faster than we can get rid of the heat that it all creates.
Right.
Whether it's that laptop or an EV battery or even a nuclear reactor, the problem is identical. How do you move thermal energy from point A to point B before something, melts?
And for the last, what, 100 years? The
Yeah.
answer has basically just been pump water through it.
Pump water through it, maybe mix in some antifreeze if you're talking about a car.
Yeah.
But yeah, we rely on these standard
Well,
fluids.
we've kind of hit a wall with them.
We have absolutely hit the physical limit of what those fluids can do. And that's why today's deep dive is so interesting. We're looking at a doctoral thesis by Yu Young Song called Stability and Thermal Conductivity of Metallic Nanofluids. The whole argument is that we need to stop just accepting fluids as nature made them
And start building
and
them.
start engineering them from the atom up.
Engineered fluids. I mean, it sounds impressive, but when you dig into the actual idea here, it sounds, well, a little risky. The core concept is suspending billions of tiny metal particles in water.
To create what they call a nanofluid.
But I'm looking at this and I just see two huge problems right away. One, metal rusts in water. And two, metal is heavy. You put steel dust in a bucket of water, it's going to sink. It feels like you're just creating a recipe for like rusty sludge that clogs up a million-dollar pump.
You are absolutely right. I mean, those are the exact reasons why this technology has been stuck in the promising phase for decades.
Gravity and corrosion.
They're the villains of this story. But the potential payoff is why researchers like Song are so obsessed with solving it.
Because of this conductivity gap you mentioned.
Exactly. Think of it this way. Water is an amazing delivery vehicle. It flows, it pumps, it moves through pipes really easily.
Right.
But as a cargo carrier for heat, it's kind of mediocre. It doesn't actually absorb that much thermal energy compared to a solid.
Whereas metals like copper or stainless steel are like heat sponges.
Instantly. They conduct energy almost instantly. But, they're solids, they don't flow.
So the dream is to get the best of both worlds.
Precisely. And this dream goes way back, actually, to the physicist James Clerk Maxwell in 1873. He predicted that if you could suspend the metal inside the liquid, you'd get the flow of the water with the thermal power of the solid.
1873. So we've known this is theoretically possible for 150 years. Why are we still using plain old water?
Because reality is a lot messier than Maxwell's math. The early attempts used particles that were way too big.
Like you could see them.
Oh, yeah, millimeter or micrometer size. They would just clog pipes and erode pumps like liquid sandpaper. It wasn't until the 90s that we could manufacture nanoparticles, I mean, stuff 1,000 times smaller than a bacterium, that the idea even became viable again.
Okay, so we can make the particle small enough now, but that brings us right back to the gravity problem. Even if it's nano-sized, stainless steel is still way heavier than water.
It is. And this is where Song's thesis really gets interesting. It's less about thermodynamics at first and more about a microscopic war against gravity.
And he chose to focus on stainless steel particles. Why stainless steel? Wouldn't copper be better? It conducts heat better.
Copper is great thermally, but it's a mess chemically in water. It oxidizes, it rusts so aggressively. Stainless steel is a compromise. It has better thermal properties in water, but it's chemically tougher.
But the trade-off is that it's harder to keep afloat.
Much harder. So the thesis is basically a guide on how to trick stainless steel into floating forever.
Okay, so how do you do that?
To get it, we have to look at what's happening in the water at, the atomic level. It's all governed by something called DLVO theory.
Which is about the forces acting on the particles.
Right. Imagine you have two of these tiny steel particles floating near each other. There is this universal attractive force called the van der Waals force. It's just a natural
Like
stickiness.
a tiny gravitational pull between them.
It's a similar idea, but electromagnetic. If they get close enough, they just snap together. That's called agglomeration.
And that's the danger zone.
That's the danger zone, because once two particles stick, they become one bigger, heavier particle, then a third sticks and a fourth, and suddenly you've got a heavy clump.
And down it goes.
And down it goes. The thesis points out that metals have a really high Hammacher constant. That's just a fancy way of saying metals are incredibly sticky at this scale. They want to clump together.
So to stop them, you need a force that pushes them apart, that's stronger than the force pulling them together.
You need a shield. You have to create a repulsive force field around every single particle so they physically cannot touch each other.
And that's what the Zeta potential is, a measure of that shield.
The Zeta potential is the scoreboard, yeah. It measures the electrical charge right at the edge of that particle's boundary. If you have a high Z potential, either very positive or very negative, the particles will repel each other.
Like trying to push two positive ends of a magnet together.
Exactly like that. And I noticed you saw the specific threshold in the data there.
Yeah, the plus minus 30 millivolts.
That is the magic number in colloid science. If you're between plus 30 and minus 30, you're in the unstable zone. The repulsion isn't strong enough. The particles will crash.
So you need to push past that.
Way past it. So Song's experiment was basically a showdown between two ways to boost that zeta potential. Method one, surfactants. Method two, pH control.
Okay, so surfactants, that's just soap, basically.
It's basically soap. It's the traditional industrial approach. We use soap to keep grease suspended in dishwater.
So the logic is it should work here.
It creates what's called steric stabilization. The soap molecules stick to the surface of the metal particle like tiny hairs or springs.
So they act as a physical bumper?
Exactly. When two particles get close, the bumpers hit and keep the metal cores from touching. Song tested a common one called an SDBS.
And the results were not great.
They were complicated. It helps a little, but they ran into a wall. And in fact, the thesis details this really crucial failure. When they added too much surfactant, the stability actually got worse.
Wait, how does that work? I would assume more soap equals more separation. Why would it get worse?
It's a phenomenon called bridging. If you have too many of these long surfactant chains floating around, they can actually get tangled up with each other.
Oh, no.
So instead of keeping particles apart, the soap molecules can act like ropes, tying the particles together.
So you accidentally tie your fleet of ships together and sink the whole lot.
That is a perfect analogy. Plus, all that soap makes the fluid kind of gloopy. For heavy stainless steel, it just wasn't a robust enough solution.
So the soap failed. That brings us to the winner.
Yeah.
pH control. This is where they just change the acidity of the water.
Exactly. They aren't coating the particle anymore. They are hacking the environment the particle is swimming in by adding a base. Specifically, they adjusted the water to pH 11 that floods the fluid with these things called hydroxyl ions.
So they're basically charging the water itself.
In a sense, yeah. They're creating an ionic shield. Those negative ions just swarm and surround the stainless steel particles, driving that zeta potential way, way down into the negative numbers.
Past that negative 30 millivolt safety zone?
Well past it. So at pH 11, the particles are so negatively charged, they basically scream at each other to stay away.
And that repulsion just overpowers the stickiness.
It completely overpowers the van der Waals forces.
Mm.
Song managed to keep heavy steel floating essentially indefinitely just by tweaking the pH.
pH 11, that's pretty caustic. Isn't that like liquid drain cleaner or ammonia?
It's aggressive, and we should definitely talk about the material implications of that later. But purely from a physics standpoint, it solved the stability problem.
Okay, so the metal is floating. We have a stable fluid. Now for the big question. Does it actually matter? Because if we went through all this chemistry just for a 1% cooling boost, I'm not that interested.
This is where the thesis delivers its most important scientific contribution. It's not just about the size of the game, but the behavior of the game.
You mentioned it was linear. Why is that such a big deal?
Because for years, nanofluid research was plagued by chaos. Different labs would report these wild, unexplainable jumps in heat transfer. Anomalous enhancement, they called it.
So it wasn't predictable?
Not at all. It made engineers really distrust the data. It looked like magic, not science.
Right.
But Song found that once the stability was perfectly solved, once you had that pH 11 ionic shield, the thermal conductivity increased in a perfectly linear way.
So you add X amount of steel, you get Y amount of cooling every single time.
It became boring, predictable math, which is exactly what you want if you're building, say, a nuclear reactor.
Exactly. Okay, so what were the numbers?
They were really impressive. They used a volume fraction of just 0.003%.
0.003%. That's nothing. That's like a tiny pinch of salt in a bathtub.
A microscopic pinch. And yet that tiny addition boosted the thermal conductivity of the water by roughly 20%.
20%. That is massive. If an engine could run 20% cooler, or a data center could turn down its AC by 20%.
The energy savings globally would be astronomical. And it wasn't just water. They saw about a 15% boost when they put the particles in ethylene glycol.
So it works for car radiators too.
Looks like it.
Okay, so we have a predictable, linear, 20% gain with a tiny amount of material. This sounds like a slam dunk. Why isn't this the industry standard yet? What's the catch?
The catch is that the real world is a hostile place. And the thesis was very rigorous about pointing out the limitations. First, there was a big hurdle just in measuring the heat.
Measurement. That seems like it should be the easy part. A thermometer is a thermometer, right?
Not at the nanoscale. They use something called the transient hot wire method. You stick a very thin wire into the fluid and heat it up to see how fast the heat dissipates.
Okay, that makes sense.
But the criticism, and it's a valid one, is that in a nanofluid, those charged particles might be attracted to the hot wire itself.
How?
So if they clump up on your sensor, they might give you a false positive. You might think the fluid is cooling great, but really you're just measuring a layer of metal stuck to your probe.
So the tool itself might be lying to you.
It might be. Now, Song spent a lot of time verifying this, comparing his data to theoretical models. And because his data was so linear and predictable, it strongly suggests the measurement was accurate. The 20% is likely real.
Okay, but you said there were other problems.
Yes. The second and bigger problem is time.
But we just said they were stable at pH 11.
Stable. For a while. Stable is a relative term. Over weeks or months, even the best electrostatic shield is fighting a losing battle against gravity. Stainless steel is dense. Eventually, sedimentation happens.
And in a lab beaker, that's fine. You can just shake it up. But in a closed-loop cooling system deep inside a server farm...
Once it settles, it's dead weight. But it gets even worse. There's a third factor that creates this paradox. Temperature.
Wait, the whole point is to handle temperature.
I know, right. But think about the physics of liquids. What happens to water when you heat it up?
It gets thinner. The viscosity drops.
Exactly. Hot water is thinner than cold water. Now, there's a thing called Stokes' law, which governs how fast a particle sinks in a fluid. And the sinking speed is all about the density of the particle versus the viscosity of the fluid.
Oh, I see where this is going. As the fluid gets hot, it gets thinner.
Huh.
Which means it loses its ability to hold the particle up.
Precisely. It's a cruel irony. The moment the coolant starts doing its job absorbing heat, it becomes structurally weaker at holding the very particles that give it the benefit in the first place.
So you have a system that works great when it's turned off, but tries to destroy itself the moment you turn it on.
That is the engineering challenge of the next decade. How do you maintain that ionic shield when the temperature is creating chaos and the viscosity is dropping through the floor?
And you're doing all of this at pH 11, which creates its own set of problems. I can't imagine pumping a caustic fluid through an aluminum radiator is a great idea.
No. It would likely eat the seals and corrode any other metals in the loop. So while Song proved the physics works pH 11 stabilizes steel, the engineering reality is that we have to find a way to do that without turning the coolant into an acid.
It feels like we're tantalizingly close, though. The fact that the linear relationship holds up means the basic theory is sound.
That is the key takeaway from all of this. For a long time, people thought metallic nanofluids were just too messy, too chaotic. This thesis proves that if you control the chemistry, if you can master the zeta potential, you can get predictable, massive gains.
It completely changes the way I look at water, honestly. We usually think of water as just this neutral stuff. But this suggests we can treat it almost like software. We can kind of code it to do what we want.
That is exactly it. We are entering the era of engineered fluids. We are no longer limited to the thermal properties of what nature just happened to provide. We can design a liquid atom by atom to break those limits.
Just probably don't drink the prototype.
Definitely not.
Well, I think that's a perfect place to wrap things up. We've gone from hot laptops to molecular force fields. It's been a fascinating look at the invisible war happening inside these new fluids.
It's always a pleasure to dig into the details.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We will catch you on the next deep dive.